Welcome to Under the Water Tower, a production of Fellowship Baptist Church, located in Marble Falls, deep in the beautiful Texas Hill Country. Join Fellowship's staff and leadership while they explore, study, and discuss Bible passages. Here are your hosts, pastors Joni Wallach, Misty Grimm, Daryl Fishbeck, and lead pastor Dr. Jamie Greening.
Work is the basic subject that we have today, and I want to start us off with some really fun conversation bits. I found a Gallup poll, the most trusted vocations. Without looking, I have it in front of me. Joni, what do you think is the most trusted vocation in America?
It used to be teachers. I don't think it is now.
Teachers? You don't have teachers in general on the list at all. You have high school teachers.
Oh, well, that's a lot lower than elementary teachers.
High school teachers are listed number four
okay.
on the list. Fishbag, you take a shot.
Crossing guards.
Oh. Nobody trusts crossing guards.
Are you being for real?
I was because I feel like this is going to be like the opposite.
I don't even know where that came from.
Crossing guards.
I feel like this is going to be the opposite of what we would, you know, assume. So I was going really extreme.
I'm not trying to trick you at all. There's no. Usually, I do have duplicity, and there is some level of subversion in everything.
Well, everyone's
that
been
I do.
So called into question nowadays. I'm trying to think of who would be authentically
trusted. This is 2023. This is fresh information.
Profession. Misty, go, and I'll come back with another one. I can't think of professions right now.
Your medical people, maybe nurses, see, doctors.
You're sniffing. You're sniffing good.
Really? I thought they would be called into question
after
2020.
Can you be more specific?
Pediatrics.
Probably like your nurse practitioners.
Nurse practitioners. You're okay.
Hospital receptionist.
I'll take nurse.
Nurse, okay.
Nurse is the number one trusted profession. And the second one is medical doctors.
I believe it.
Interesting.
Which is, I found strange given the second guessing people do of their doctor.
That's what I was
right?
Yeah, we're a Google.
I've got so many friends that have told me over the years, right now I have a really good friend who talks about Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. People will come into to the doctor, to the ER, and they'll say, I looked it up, this is what I got. And the doctor will say, actually, no, you don't have a parasite from Venezuela.
Yeah.
That you've never left your county.
You've never left your county. You don't have that. But all the symptoms line up. Yeah, but that's not what you have. And they'll argue with them, and then and basically the professional has to say, well, look, you came to see me. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm telling you have.
And also the patient has to be honest as to why they're there, right? Like, I've got these issues, and the doctors will, you know, what have you done? And so I can see that. And Greg, you know, he was an RN nurse, and he is still an RN nurse.
Why is the screwdriver in your forearm?
Exactly. And people just pour things out. I mean, he comes home and he used to tell me all kinds of things because people are there and they're very, what's the word?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable. And they just start pouring stuff out.
I thought drunk.
Nope.
That too.
They come to the ER because.
Aren't we all vulnerable?
Because the last words we all say is hold my beer.
Yeah.
And so I fear they're all inebriated.
Pretty much.
I don't know how that fish hook got there.
I don't know.
Joni's already crossing stuff out of her Bible. What are you doing over there?
Do not trust doctors.
Her pencil's there.
What'd you break over there? You're breaking my microphone.
Breaking the microphone.
So breaking the law. Breaking the law.
Nurses. So doctors and nurses. Any guess on the number three trusted?
I'm thinking pastors.
I would say pastors, but I feel like they're going to be low.
They're going down.
Pastors are number eight.
Policemen.
Eight's not horrible.
Well, policemen?
Like law enforcement?
But they're seven.
Maybe?
Policemen are number five.
What was the demographic that was asked? Who was asked?
It's a nationwide poll across demographics.
What's the year?
It's Gallup, 2023. This is fresh material. And so keep tracking with me for a minute. The number three most trusted profession
Post
in
office.
America. Pharmacists.
Oh,
that's true. That's true.
So nurse, doctor, pharmacist. They're all medical.
I was going to say like
there's
a judge.
There's a lot of checks with that. There's with pharmacy, there's lots of checks.
Well, and I just had a wild thought, and I don't know if this is chasing a rabbit or not, but I was thinking what allows people to trust or what causes people to not trust? And typically it's if it's a profession that doesn't have a reputation for doing bad or shady things. How I know pharmacists probably do some under the table things, but how many pharmacist stories do you hear about a pharmacist doing something really illegal or immoral? You probably don't. So you're not going into the pharmacist, they call it a chemist in England. You're not going to the chemist.
It's the apothecary.
You had way too much caffeine today.
I've been up since 4. You're not going to the chemist questioning as you might the doctor or...
I need you not to call it the chemist. I can't with you today. The chemist and your boot and your mobile and the list.
Anyway, so I think do you wonder if some of these professions that have lost trust because a few bad eggs have spoiled the...
Well, I don't understand how high school teachers is number 4. So it's 4.
It's weird. I'm having a hard time figuring out how they came to this conclusion.
It's most just trusted. Bizarre. So it's nurse. Now the nurse makes sense to me.
I can get that.
When
I
you
can
go
see
to
that.
The doctor, the nurse is the one that has sympathy for right. you.
And the nurse is that's your friend. That's your.
Mm-hmm. The nurse is the one who listens, who talks, who I always view the nurse as the
and
one
listens.
Who's running interference
between the patient,
between
the
me and the doctor. Like right. the doctor's not going to listen to me, but if I can right. get the nurse on my side,
right. they'll go to. It's kind of like I'm going to talk to mom and get them to talk to dad or vice versa.
Something
what about
like
a counselor, like your therapist or your counselor. Would they make the list?
Did they make the list?
Okay. So, I'm just thought we'd spend some more time on it. High school 4, police officers number 5, and then right behind them. So I said 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number 6 is clergy. Right?
Oh.
That's not too
bad. Well, we're way down the line.
Well,
I would say that's actually not too bad.
Well, but it gets worse when I break the numbers down. So the way the poll rates is there's a very high and high view. So if you take the very high and high, nurses come to 79% trust rate. Clergy, though, we're not that low on the list, number 6 on the list, we have an 8 and 26. So our overall is only 34%.
Hmm.
So it's almost half of nurses. So people are twice as likely to trust the nurse as your clergy. Right behind us is judges. Now, that's strange. I would think the judges would be higher.
Really?
I'm just fascinated with the high school teacher part still. You keep breaking your microphone.
Just leave it off, but don't stab yourself with that metal. Yeah. It screws on like a nut. So thread it.
I'm fine.
All right, just checking.
I'm fine. Carry on with
the falls off again.
So, no, I'm fascinated this with high school teachers. Podcasting. Maybe we should start again.
No,
this is good.
I don't understand. Like, were they given a list of, hey, rank these? Or was it
open-ended?
I'm offended.
I know. Are you surprised that it's high school teachers in general or over elementary teachers, which you were?
Yes. Yes,
I am.
Let's
get to the source of your anger, Joe.
Other kinds of teachers aren't even listed, right? It's the...
See, I think they were given a list. Hey, rank these.
They may have been, the high school teachers are there. For some reason, like kindergarten teachers were not listed.
Well, I think they're very trustworthy.
Maybe it's because when you remember back to your schooling, you don't always think about the younger teachers. You remember that high school teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So it's an Joni, I appreciate all the teaching that you've done and do. I think I trust you above all the people on this list.
Thanks. What's interesting, like real estate agents get 20%, which is only 14 below clergy.
See, that's weird.
Lawyers, I thought, would be at the bottom. They're 18%.
Well, it depends if it's your lawyer or not.
Well, let's talk about that in just a minute. The very lowest ones, right? So the third from the bottom... car salesman.
Yeah.
Behind that, members of Congress.
Rightly so.
But there's one that's lower than members of Congress.
Right, so this is the lowest
mechanics.
Place?
Bank robber.
Hold on.
Mechanics,
let's see if we can figure
robber.
It out. This
bankers
is the worst.
Bankers would be trusted. I would feel like
bank
your
robbers.
Bank, your bank, not bank robbers.
Bank robbers.
Bankers. Tellers?
Bankers are right above real estate.
See, I would have thought car salesman might have been the least. Mechanics
insurance.
Is probably the good one. I don't think it's the
insurance
last
salesman.
One.
No, insurance.
God, who's left? I can't think
didn't
of any.
Didn't make the cut.
I can't think of any jobs.
You ready?
Careers.
Yeah. Baristas.
Telemarketers.
Yeah.
There's a little.
Distrusted. So why do you think some professions we trust over others? I mean, I made a little note, like the members of Congress and really is interesting because we're in the middle of an election season right now, the primary. I get mail every day from everybody who's running every day. Facebook is filled with it. I got a,
and it's totally side note here. It's frustrating to think of the money and the paper and the things that are they're wasting.
10% of their budget.
And
for
how
real.
Much how much of their campaign platform is being hypocritical by all this junk mail and texting and stuff. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, I think it goes back to what I said earlier. I think when a profession, I think we have expectations on a profession. And when they break those or habitually have kind of don't live up to even their own sales pitch of this is who I am and this is what I'm doing, and you start finding out over and over and over that they're breaking the law or they're not, they don't have integrity or things like that, that's when I think you lose trust and confidence in whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a grocer in town and you find out that they're constantly cheating you somehow, then your trust of grocers is going to go
But if you look
down.
At the list, your level of trust for each of these occupations varies, right? You don't have the same level of trust for a nurse as your nurse as you would for your lawyer.
But
you
that's
know what
I'm
mean? You know what I'm saying?
But I'm saying I feel like that's tied to reputation. Which of these careers have a reputation of potentially doing something distrustful?
Yeah. Well, I think it's also tied to checks and balances. Like which ones have you have to be checked on things. Like
and what is that you know, like I think there's certain it may even be in the legal profession. There's I can't think of a name. There's like certain kind of review, peer review, and things like that.
Right.
When you put a ruling or something like that out there, you have your peers who are educated in the field like you. I don't know if teachers have similar. You might have your administrator come in and watch you in class.
There's a lot of checks.
But is that that almost?
I think that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah,
that becomes
like
more
pharmacy?
Pressure.
Yeah. No, I don't think.
But all these people, they're doing something for you, right? They're offering you a service. If you want the doctors and the nurses to help you, then you have to be honest with them. If you want your pharmacist to give you the right prescription, then you do have to trust them because they're giving you something. If you're wanting you're buying a home, right, and you're wanting the best deal for your money, then you have to trust.
You
be willing.
You do, but I think
it's an exchange.
What this poll is saying is like when you go to buy a car because you have to buy a car and you have to deal with the car salesman versus when you go get your prescription, your internal level of trust is higher in the pharmacist
right.
than the car salesman because of whatever we're trying to figure out here.
So the phenomena, again, where I started before you
derailed things.
Derailed.
You're welcome.
Shanghai, if you want. This conversation is so Congress is rates low, and in every poll you ever do, they always rate. It doesn't. Well, that's just where things are at. That's always been that way.
Right.
Yet we keep electing the same people to go every year. Right? You have people who served over and over, and they run, and we vote for them over.
It becomes their career.
Yet we say we don't trust them, yet we vote for them, because what we always do is
we don't know them, though.
Well,
there's no relationship.
Maybe we don't
there.
Trust the system.
What happens is we say we trust ours,
yeah,
but not everybody else's, because ours is the one. So I think about the clergy aspect. I know a lot of people, and everybody can point to one minister, one pastor that they love and adore. A man or a woman who impacted their life, who taught them, who they really trust. But when you ask them this question on a poll, that's not the person who comes to their mind.
Right.
It's the lowest common denominator that comes to their mind, the scandal, the Austin Stone stuff, the Jimmy Swagger. You know, Jimmy Swagger, that was 50 years ago almost, and people still bring that stuff up. Do you know who
that
is?
But that was probably one of the most,
okay.
one of the first biggest public ones, do you think?
Maybe.
And maybe people don't see clergy as an occupation either.
What do you do all week?
I think that's part of it.
I pray. And if you'd stop sinning, I could get more work done. I wouldn't have to pray for you.
She said,
Greg, you work at the hospital and Misty, so you don't work? that's right. You do work at the church.
That's hilarious. So the issue
is
the issue goes
right. Misty and Joni are both a little on edge today, so we need to watch out.
I think that's probably a true statement.
That's
every
why
day.
They had to separate us.
But trust is related to how hard they think you're working.
Yeah.
And so I believe they think, I mean, nurses do work hard. Please, I love nurses. Nurses, but the nurses always present
right.
as hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
In every TV show you've ever seen, the nurse is the hardest working person.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor presents as golfing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Not working. So, and I think in American culture, trust is equated with hard work.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, because that's what it is. So the telemarketer we don't view as working very hard at all.
Because they're sitting in a cubicle making phone calls, harassing people.
Button, right?
Yeah.
Never mind. I have worked at a phone, not a telemarketer, but I worked on a phone bank once where you answered. That's horrible work.
Yeah.
It's one of the most thankless jobs. I would never go back to that. So I think some of that's going
on. What about construction? Why don't we trust construction more then? Because maybe.
They do work hard.
No, but what's the old joke? There's five sitting around watching mm-hmm. one person work. So it's the mm-hmm. idea. Work ethic in American culture mm-hmm. equals trust.
Mm-hmm.
If they're hardworking, we trust them.
And
so doctors, nurses,
yep.
High school teachers, pharmacists, police, these are all hardworking mm-hmm. individuals that their moral integrity, I think, is irrelevant.
Right.
I was about to say, so they're you could almost, as a politician or as a pastor, you could create this platform using the language of I'm working for you and convey all of these things and literally be playing golf all week. But if you can get them to believe you're hard working, you're just working away in your office or whatever, then that would be a way to maybe manipulate people's trusts.
I think pastors do it all the time. Go ahead.
I think, though, maybe generations like X and Y see that you're hardworking and, like, the more hours you put in, the more I'm going to trust you, the more. But I think Generation Z is completely different on that. I think they want more authenticity and whether that.
Except when they want their pills.
Well, maybe.
When Gen Z.
They're an anxious group.
When they go to pharmacy. They want a hardworking person behind there. Now, they'll probably readily admit that's not them, but they want someone back there. So they're still going to trust the person who's working hard for them. The counselors don't make the cut because the view of counselors are...
They don't work very hard.
Just sit and listen to people's problems all day. And you're married to a counselor,
Daryl.
And you know better than that, right? It's
exhausting.
Mental. I'm a pastor,
all
and I
mental.
Love doing pastoral counseling with folks in the crisis of their life. But I've never hung my shingle out to be the kind of pastor who wants to do counseling. And I know some who do, right?
You're basically seeing people almost at their worst every time
right.
you.
Well, but counselors who put their shingle out to be a counselor, they'll spend 5-6 hours. I think people come into their office
mm-hmm.
and sit. I would go home and just gnaw my vein right out of my wrist.
Internalize all of that.
It's a work I don't want to do. So I think a lot has to do with the work ethic. So that brings us to the idea of what's the holiest job in America?
I was going to say, our job is, when it boils down to it, we've got the most important job.
I think you have to define work ethic because I do think generations would define that differently.
Agreed.
Hard work is hard work.
I don't know, because I've put in a lot of hours and spun my wheels doing a lot of things and not had any different results than someone who has said, okay, at 4:30 I'm going to leave because I'm a mom and I need to go home and take care of my kids.
I feel like
I could have done things better. I feel like the Gen Z now that are coming into the workforce, I feel like they're less competitive and more collaborative.
And I think I wrote this somewhere in my
Joni's
notes.
Joni's, welcome to the old woman club, Joni.
I'm Gen Y.
I think the American dream and the World War II generation that really had to sacrifice and did some incredibly noble things, almost at times that standard of sacrifice and work is used comparatively to almost put down people who find a way maybe to produce or work hard with the same energy or veracity. It just looks different. And we're very we love to compare in America and try and, you know, I've won more this or
that's not
this.
Uniquely American.
Well, okay, human. Sorry, I don't want to criticize other countries.
Bangladesh.
I think the younger generation too is discovering the failure of the.
Let the record reflect. He pointed right at Joni when
because
he said
that's
generation.
What she was talking about. I'm pointing at her because that was
he
was
didn't point
her
at me.
Topic.
So.
No, because she keeps making that point.
I know.
I'm saying I think they're frustrated because they watch their parents or their grandparents sacrifice, maybe
sure.
have a bunch of stuff, and still be miserable people yeah. or mean people. And I'm not saying that the American dream caused that. I'm just saying they're starting to connect some dots and saying, I would rather have some more peace in my life than work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and be a miserable person.
Right. My life is not defined by my work.
I think our conversation has shifted. I think we've moved
and
to...
And that's where pastors come in, right? Right. Then we come in and we say it's not all about the stuff.
We shift everything. But I think the conversation has shifted from what... different generations perceive as work ethic. I think they all would say the ones I trust, though, are the ones who work hard for me.
Okay.
And
I'll give you that.
Regardless of their own individual work ethic. I don't mean to sound, I have great hope for Gen Z and Gen Y. I think they're great. I love them. But one of their challenges is they're not hardy. When things get rough, they fold like a card table.
Right.
They're going to have to come through. They will eventually come through that because they will grow up. But what happens when they fold and they know they're folding, who do they turn to mm-hmm. in that crisis? It's who they trust. And they'll turn to the people who they think are the most hardest working for them.
Right.
No one else matters, just them. And that's where this inherent selfishness comes through. So we're talking about this issue because I think in America, the holiness factors, our conversation really is the holiness of work. And I will tell you that these numbers fascinate me because I've been saying for years, and I didn't invent it, someone else did, but the new priesthood in America is the medical profession. Mm-hmm. They have taken the place at almost every juncture of where religious personnel, RPs, of where clergy have historically resided.
Mm-hmm.
They even wear their own special uniforms and gowns. You're ushered into the Holy of Holies for the OR where nowhere else can go into. Then you have your special liturgies and the things that you do, and you're asked over and over again to what? Just trust the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We do this all the time.
We do this all the time. Trust the doctor. Your body's going to do certain things. And so all of that has come to be in us a way of living that mimics what traditional priesthood has done. Yeah. Say these words, do these things. I'm going to wear these clothes. And when I'm done, I'm going to go back here behind the office where you can't see me no more and do special holy stuff to you. Mm. It's the same idea. So I think the medical profession has really replaced that holy and sacred. Now, I'm not upset about that because in my predisposition, there's no difference between holiness and sacred. I think that's a thing that we have invented mm-hmm. as human beings. Now, don't quote Leviticus to me because I know Leviticus as well. But in the New Testament world in which I live in, or I try to live in as best I can, we're all sinners saved by grace, and we all have equal access to the Lord because Jesus is our great high priest. Book of Hebrews, all of it. So he's the one who's holy. You do have individual clergy who have more responsibility. I think mm-hmm. as a teacher, as a leader, as an under-shepherd, as it were, there's more responsibility. But I am no more holy than anybody else.
So maybe the list has to do more with what's at stake. Because our health is something that we feel like...
Do you think your health is more important than your soul?
Not at all. But I think some people would... You only go to a doctor when you're sick. They think we only go to the clergy when we, depending on who they are.
Sick. When you when have a big tithe check.
We hope. You know, when you want to get married or buried or, have a spiritual crisis. So I think the list almost to me is like, who do you need in crisis the most? Or what can you not do for yourself?
And that's what happens when you turn faith into just another goods and services.
Right.
Which is a problematic thing. But do you agree with the presupposition that I have that all work is holy?
Absolutely.
So the person who pours concrete, I think, has just as sacred job as I do. The responsibilities are different, and our skill sets are different. I don't want the person who pours concrete to come to me and say, you know what, I think you're doing it wrong. I think that you should do it like this. Here's 17 things, because he probably doesn't know what. I wouldn't go to his work and say, I think you're doing it wrong. Right?
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
So the electricians, I love electricians.
There's a trust level there. You don't want your house to burn down.
Well, but also, I don't want to die messing around with power cables.
Well, you're also now getting into the issue of, you're talking about trusting people by profession. I know a lot of people that I wouldn't trust regardless of the profession just because of their work ethic and their, you know, their abilities or Easton works in land surveying, and he talks all the time when they go to different projects and they bump up against a boundary that some other company has surveyed, and he said we have trouble with certain companies in the area because they have a reputation for kind of being careless with their work, and sometimes they have to come back and reset some boundary markers and stuff. And I feel like there's that in whatever profession you're in.
Is resetting a boundary marker in the wrong place theft?
It can create definitely some issues. I don't know if it's considered theft or not, but it good question. I'll have to ask.
That's a fascinating idea there. I'm just going to reset this boundary marker a quarter mile that way. My ranch just got bigger.
Well, and he did say, like in the olden days, when it would be like 300 clicks to this oak tree and go do southwest 500 to this pile of rocks, those type of things could be moved, and I think that would be considered probably a form of theft. And so I would think the reputation or the history in land surveying might have some fascinating elements of people who might have been strung up for moving a boundary marker or something.
Mm. So that's an important point to make. What is it that makes work sacred in general? So let's go back to the concrete pourer. I know some beloved concrete pourers. What makes that work sacred, Misty?
Well, I think it's you doing it the right way. I mean, doing it where it's safe. And with that even, I mean, you have your line of integrity and responsibility and reputation. I think a lot of it goes into the same aspects as you were talking about being a pastor. You put your whole heart into it, and I think that's a lot of it.
I think that's a huge part of it. Honestly, part of it is that you're serving the needs of others.
Right.
So
you want it to be safe. You want it to be
right.
Yeah.
Usable. You've poured that foundation. Mm-hmm. A family's going to live in here.
Right.
You are literally building something. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's a biblical metaphor. Mm-hmm. When every time you pour concrete, the Bible talks about laying a firm foundation.
Yeah. Well, and integrity, you're doing it right. You don't skimp. You don't do it just quick and easy. You do it the way you would do it if your family was going to be there using it.
Well, I saw a funny meme the other day. It said, how many of you are disappointed?
Not a meme.
Well, I was going to say TikTok, but I thought you'd make fun of me for that anyway.
You're not supposed to say I saw a TikTok. You're supposed to say I read somewhere.
There it is. I read somewhere someone who said, how many of y'all are disappointed that your family gave you a great work ethic instead of a big inheritance? And I thought, yeah, that's me. But my parents both have a pretty good reputation. My dad had his own business in Blanco, and had everyone all over would only bring their lawnmowers, chainsaws, weed eaters, things like that to him because they know he would do it right.
My blades need sharpening. Can I still bring it
to
him?
He would sharpen them. No, not anymore. And he didn't pass that on to me. Or I didn't pick that up. Sorry.
At least he has something to fall back on.
Well, even to the point where he could have fixed someone's lawnmower, and this has happened several times, fixed their lawnmower, they take it and they bring it back a week later and say, I don't know what happened, I don't think you fixed it right. And he would look at it and could tell, yeah, they hit a stump or a rock, they messed it up, and try and say, well, did you do anything? No, I didn't do anything to it, I didn't do anything. And he would fix it. And so he would kind of absorb things like that rather than make a big deal out of it. And he had a reputation for being honest, for doing things well, for fixing things the way he would want to use them. And so to piggyback on what Misty's saying, I think just personal integrity and the when you lay your head on the pillow at night to know that you gave it all as far as your knowledge, your abilities, and you tried to offer something.
So is all work sacred and holy, or just hard work and integrity-filled work sacred?
I think it has to do with, I don't know, because I feel like there's a trick thing that I'm overlooking in there. I feel like
I would never deceive you or trick you or lay a trap for you.
I'm going to come at this more from the angle of
lie down, have a little milk.
Of we're at 30 minutes, we should probably take a break.
Oh no, this is good.
And when you say all work, I don't know, because being a thief might be considered work, and I don't know.
What if you're an honest? What if you're Robin Hood? Right?
What if you're the telemarketer that's scamming people? That's work.
I wouldn't call
some
it
of the
sacred.
Hardest working people are criminals.
I would say if you're you're breaking the law in a
if your work is sin,
right? And then again, define we can sin. Split hairs here, because you got Robin Hood, and technically he was breaking the law, but was he doing the greater good? But anyway, that's not my point.
Only when he's not Kevin Costner.
I think I still love that movie.
That's all. No way. We cannot be friends anymore.
I love that movie.
Kevin Costner.
I'm not saying
Prince
he,
of Thieves,
I'm
right?
not saying he did the accent or acted well in it, but overall
you
that movie has
today
some
is
emotional.
Alan Rickman's birthday. You are dishonoring Alan Rickman by saying it's a great movie because he's in that movie and Kevin.
So you're
going
to say it's a bad movie with Alan Rickman being in it?
Because Kevin Costner sullied it so badly.
Bad.
He sullied it. It's disgusting.
I have emotional connections to that movie
because of Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, no doubt.
Maybe. It's a time in my – it's nostalgic for me. So there you go. And the soundtrack. It's the Bryan Adams song. You can, everything I do for you. You can't.
I do know that song.
Have I sidetracked the question long enough we can take a break and
no,
come back
to it?
No,
we cannot. I need to get back to this. So if you are – is all work holy and sacred, or just hard work and integrity work sacred? And push it further. I had a conversation yesterday with my doctor, go back to medical professionals, who I trust. And we're talking, and she's working on me, and we're having a conversation. And we had the discussion about the difference between hard work and brilliance. Mm. In our culture, we tend to reward brilliance more than hard work. We think of the boy genius myth, the idea some people are just born really, really smart. And both she and I think that that's kind of ridiculous. You almost have to work yourself into brilliance, because when we have the lie that says you're either born brilliant or you're not, then we say we parse people off. Mm-hmm. You're brilliant, so your work is more important than someone else's who's not brilliant. Well, the truth of the matter is the person who's maybe not that brilliant can work hard and actually may achieve more than the brilliant person and have far more significance because they did work hard, they did do the time, and maybe they viewed their work as sacred and not some sort of entitlement.
I was just born with it.
And see, that's where I want to flip this on its head a little bit. Instead of us looking on the outside in saying, is all work or hard work sacred or holy or good or right, I want to come from the perspective of me as an individual. You know, God created, and I think God is creating, and we are creative, and I think we are maybe most in our authentic self when we are creating something out of our unique design, and I think work is creative, and so I think work that is holy and sacred and good is work that is authentic. It's something that's flowing out of you authentically. So you may have someone who's brilliant, who can do incredible things, but it's just because they're a Rain Man at it or something, and their heart's not really in it or something. And we as a culture might reward it or honor it, but to them, they may still feel empty and hollow. And I think some form of work that is creative and that flows out of us brings something back to us in the form of fulfillment. That's where I think we should be defining what's holy or what's
sacred.
Well,
and when we do that, and when we, it makes me think of Solomon, you know, doing things in vain unless the Lord builds the house. And so things that aren't holy, I think a lot of times are done in vain. And the difference between it being holy, you know, I feel like us as clergy and pastors, you know, we give glory to God for all things. We ask him for guidance and wisdom and help us do this and help us to, you know, where do we go from here? Whereas other people don't do that. And so it's all themselves. Look what I did. This is what I figured out. It didn't work, so I made a plan. So and I think that's the difference.
So you could almost say the difference is our why. Our why we do things.
No. Not our why as much as our focus.
Don't dismiss that. The, you know that was a good
point. As you're writing, I'm thinking about Bach, right, who on every piece of music he wrote was the like the IHS on there. As a glory to God, mm-hmm. in the service of the Lord, everything right. he did.
But again, you've got mega churches that are say we're doing this for God's glory, and all they're doing is make line in their pockets. Now, I know I'm questioning motives, but I think there's been evidence of it.
I think there's evidence of that, but that doesn't mean that still the work itself is not sacred. Right?
The product, a person can do work.
A bad thing and be a bad person, but their work can still be holy.
Good come out of it.
You know, Wernher von Braun made missiles for the Nazis, but he also built the rockets that put us on the moon. Mm-hmm. And I would say science has its value in sacred work. Fishbake's dying for a break.
No, I'm just telling you we're sitting at 36 minutes.
So we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back. I'm going to make them squirm some more.
Okay, bye.
You are listening to Under the Water Tower, a ministry of Fellowship Baptist Church located in Marble Falls. We would love for you to join us for worship. Visit our website for worship times at fmf.life. Do you have questions or suggestions on future topics for Under the Water Tower? We would love to hear them. Send us an email to office@fmf.life. If you like what you hear and would like to support this ministry, visit fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give.
So do you think people have a calling, like we were talking about the nurses and the doctors, do you think they have a calling early on in their life like people do in the ministerial world?
The Latin word vocare.
Vocation.
Vocation.
Mm-hmm. It's to be called, to be summoned, to be invited. So the vocation of doctor or nurse, high school teacher, kindergarten teacher, those are noble callings that I believe God has for folks to do that. And it's just as meaningful as any other work. So yeah, absolutely. I think that people are called to do specific things. I mean, one of them.
Doogie Howser.
I know, do
doctors
you
or house.
I really love the history of Winston Churchill. It's one of my pet projects. My daughter Phoebe says I'm secretly studying for the ultimate World War II quiz. when the authoritarian government takes over and they say you have to pass this World War II quiz to live, I got it.
We're just going to cheat off of you.
Yeah.
Churchill was an elitist, a drunkard. He had terrible depression. He was not a nice man to be around in general. He was bossy, and even his family had issues with him. And the government hated him. He made terrible, terrible mistakes. But his calling, all of that led up. He was the only person. Mm-hmm. The it boils down to that only he could do what he did, and he was the right person at the right time. And I think we all sort of have that aspect. You may not figure it out to the end.
Mm-hmm.
An old man when that happened.
Yeah.
And so that's how I feel about that. Only he could do that. So I think everyone has that same calling.
Do you feel like all jobs have a calling?
Mm-hmm.
So you think the barista has a calling? You think
they have a big calling.
You think
especially if they make my Americano right.
The clerk at Walmart has a calling. Do you think the?
Let me be more specific. Now you just throw things at me.
Yeah, Misty was supposed to start, and she started with a question and threw it right back at you. Hey, Jamie. Well, and
I don't mean servants like
right.
aristocrats and nobility have servants. I mean, this is what fills your cup. You want to make people, you're very good at it. They should be compensated well for it. That's how I feel.
Do you feel, though, that we've hinged too much on what is your vocation and not so much who, what is your identity, though?
Absolutely.
I feel like we've hinged, especially like Generation X and Y, so much has like hinged, and boomers too, has hinged
their. What do you mean hinged?
Like their identity is all wrapped up in their vocation. And I feel like when I switched from being an educator to clergy, like I had to untangle a lot of that because so much of my identity was wrapped up in.
That's like the old joke we used to have in the youth ministry world was when any of our youth ministry peers would become a senior pastor, we say, "Oh, I see you left the ministry to become a pastor."
Right.
And,
right.
And kind of.
Teach.
They learned. But
well,
I think we just wrap too much of our identity in what we do rather than who we are.
And well, I think and it's a few select that have a calling early on. Like, how old were you when you knew you wanted to be a teacher?
Well, I actually thought I wanted to be in ministry, but I wasn't built right for that.
Well, and wasn't it Colonel Sanders didn't figure out how to fry chicken until he was like in his 70s or whatever? So, I mean, some.
No, but Joni, like, when did you start feeling? Okay, so how old were you when you started feeling the call to ministry?
So, I was in high school when I felt like it was working with children or working mm-hmm. with, you know, and that in teaching.
So
is
you
what
took
that
your
up.
Call for ministry and kind of decided you thought you couldn't do that. You were convinced you couldn't do that. So then you kind of switched it over to teaching. Like, what can I do?
Right.
So then it turned into teaching.
So and okay. I feel like that was still an answer to the call. Like I do feel like that was still an answer to the call of ministry, but it didn't change who I was in Christ. Y'all
right, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I was just trying to get, okay, so, oh, go ahead.
But I feel like for you, you've done lots of different things, but who you are has encompassed all of that.
Right.
You know?
Because I felt called at an early age, too. I was in sixth grade, and I can remember thinking, I hate my life. I want something better. I want better. And I knew at that age that what I wanted to do, but like Joni, I wasn't sure how I was supposed to get there. So, yeah, did other things that the Lord used to bring me to where I am today. And so that's interesting.
And his timing is perfect. But I feel sure. like with you, like knowing your story, every step of the way grew you to where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
So it.
Absolutely.
Right. Well,
mm-hmm.
Females,
just
we were invited to the table, but
we're a long time ago.
Just appreciative that we are invited to the table now.
No, ma'am. Again, don't just be thankful to be letting you in the door.
Mm.
Oh.
You have a right to
I'm not saying you specifically, but I'm saying just in general. Like,
no, it's Jamie's fault.
And I feel like I've had to fight my way my whole entire life.
Yeah.
So how old were you, Daryl, when you felt called?
It was high school. Yeah, I'm still hoping God's going to, I'm going to wear God down and he's going, okay, fine, you can keep doing this.
Moses.
No, I had my experience, you know, I struggle sometimes with it because I know there was an element of people pleasing involved. I loved the church. I loved the environment of being a part of the church. And so there was an element I'd like this world. Grown out of that, but no, I'm being sorry.
And that's interesting because you know you and Joni were raised in church. I wasn't,
right?
And so the call there is different.
But my specific pinpoint moment is one of the most defining moments that I can remember. Spiritual markers, to quote Henry Blackaby, was at a super summer in 1990 on the campus of Baylor University in one of the teaching sessions, and the guy leading, and I actually years later got to work with the guy who was teaching at that time. He was calling, you know, the students to commit their lives and if they felt called to something. And he said, I don't want you to just stand up. I don't want you to just raise your hand. I want you to get up and stand in your chair. And I remember so strongly being called to do that.
To get up.
Unfortunately, it was just teenagers.
Get your feet out of
those
chairs.
What's wrong with these
just
kids?
Just teenagers.
That's funny. But
this
the
was Gen X. It didn't matter.
The difference. That's funny. Yeah.
They didn't give us water out at the 100 degree wreck every day.
That's funny.
Gen X survived. We've been through some things.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I watched a video the other day of 80s kids jumping plywood ramps
yep.
and on bicycles and
stepping
stuff.
Stepping on so. Cigarettes.
The difference is, though, for you, we were probably about the same age. I remember mine was at Reunion Arena in, you know, 96. But the difference for you is you were told, wow, look at all these opportunities. For me, I was told you can be a missionary or you can homeschool your kids. Or, like, I thought my education degree would be more so that I could be a teacher in the mission field is what I intended, is what I, you know, thought going into it. So there weren't options for me.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah. I think you made some comment earlier. Well, I've been holding on to this quote, this quote I wanted to read. It says, we all eventually discovered that our hearts and souls will not be fed at the trough of self-seeking. And I think that goes to what you were saying about age. Is
say it again.
Read it again.
We all, okay, all. Is that what you're scoffing at? We eventually discover that our hearts and souls will not be fed at the trough of self-seeking.
The false part of that statement is not everybody comes back.
Right, and that's why I said the all. Well, and I think that goes to Misty's comment about when. I think some people maybe at a younger age are able to realize their calling and their life's fulfillment is in giving themselves away or their life to others. And some people think, no, I'm going to go get this for me, and then you get burnt out on, I've been doing this for me my whole life, and there's nothing in it. And the real reward is giving something of yourself away that benefits others or helps or serves others.
I do believe that's true. That moment when you feel God's calling your life, I believe doctors feel the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Experiencing different.
And maybe this wasn't a this happens. This was a this is what it looks like. We all discover. So when you discover that, those that can agree with it have that moment of, yeah, it was when I finally realized living my life just for me is not gonna scratch the itch.
Our insurance agent, when my brother's roof blew off and it was actually raining into his house, our insurance agent like was there with his mud boots on cleaning up the mess too. And it's like he wasn't just I'm gonna push the paper, but I'm gonna be in this with you.
He was
so
there,
it depends on their heart and
serve you. Above
He's
and beyond,
with you in the flood, or
well,
in
and
the
it's not, I'm not to not to endorse a movie because I'm not saying go watch this movie, but Jerry Maguire, and you know the premise of that movie is a guy
show
in a pretty
me the money.
A pretty cutthroat a cutthroat business.
I know
that basically builds a new business on. Serving his client, like that's what the insurance thing is. What made me think of that? He's going to make money, of course he is, but it wasn't using people to build a kingdom, so to speak.
A calling moment. I mean, some people, we talk about members of Congress, and I really think that no sane person ever runs for office. But that I have a unique place in this world, and this is where it's at. I have no doubt that Jesse will feel that way.
There's actually someone that's been in the news, the media, and the national media a lot. A politician that his face and name have been there that actually was a Super Summer guy back from the 90s. And then so he was obviously in the ministry and maybe got out of the ministry to follow politics. So maybe he's not.
He was probably a salesman somewhere in between, though.
Oh, I totally agree. That God's no respecter of persons.
Right.
And while I respect the position and office of governmental leaders, whether governor, police officer, these are all important people, we should respect them, to think that that's somehow more significant than, say, a youth pastor or a family minister or a children's pastor or whatever it is I do, all of these things are more significant than the crass world, because what we're doing is
And I feel all these jobs or occupations we listed earlier, all those people are getting monetary rewards, right? Our jobs are different. Although we get paid, we don't base how hard we work on our paychecks.
I do.
And I think that it's your passion and it's your what we do. And I'm not downplaying what anybody else does, but there's a difference. There's absolutely a difference.
Oh, I would not want to follow his path. I'm just saying it's interesting to see someone, and he wouldn't know me from Adam, and I just knew him from a distance. I just remember him in that place to now see him in this whole different world, to actually feel like I don't know any politicians, you know, one or two, and to it's
we can
interesting
send some
to
your house because they knock
I get
on
enough
doors,
of their
so
mail.
Apparently.
I feel like our obligations as pastors, we have an obligation to the people, to what's most beneficial to them, for not our benefit, but for theirs and who, you know, their relationship with Jesus. Whereas an insurance person, they're going to work hard for you because guess what? They get something in return, which is a business transaction. So for me, I feel like there's a difference there. I see what you're saying, but I also see what I'm saying. I hear you.
I see what you're stepping in.
I think that for me, there's one more distinction. I never viewed myself as working for or that my clientele was people in church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I work for one person. Mm-hmm.
Right, but in saying that, yeah, we are under obligation to be his mouthpiece,
right,
and to be his, yeah.
So the people that I minister with are two, that's the object and not the subject of what I do. Because if I ever see, this could see a failing in me, if I ever go down the path of I work for the church, then I will start to do the things they want me to do.
Exactly, which sets us apart from a plumber or an electrician or a banker. That's what I'm saying.
The church people's agenda is not the same as God's. And so I have to be very, very careful about that in my own vocabulary.
Well, and that's what I was going to say in the history, been in my history and experience of being in ministry. The problems I've seen in churches arise are kind of twofold. And it's either when you have a pastor who's too authoritarian or they think they are God. More so than just the mouthpiece, and they're not there to serve the people. They're there with an agenda, or vice versa. You have the people that see the pastor as kind of their voted-in politician,
right? And
that
I'm not
should
about
be doing what they want, and then that's
and
when you have trouble.
That.
No, I know you're not. I'm just kind of taking a side here. Is that the problems in churches is when there's not some form of give and take there, where the pastor's leading but also serving, but the people are upholding, but at the same time maybe challenging or whatever, but working together in a sense of community. We talked about Moses and the Israelites in the 9:33 class on Sunday and just the challenges he had in being a very definitive, ordained leader from God, and just the dealing with a lot of the grumbling and the frustration. But at the same time, if you look at what the Israelites went through, I can relate to some of the stresses, and it's
and where was Moses' final reward? It wasn't here, right? He got to go to heaven. And just like with us, and scripture says, our reward is not in things or in the people or in what we do.
Ultimately, it's going to come down to us and God.
Yeah.
I think our vocations are different, but like Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work heartily. Who? There it is. Where? What are you talking about? I did, because it's relevant. Whatever you do.
She knew it was
going to
be a perfect wrap-up to today's podcast.
As for never mind, y'all. Never mind.
Read, Joni. I'm listening.
Thank you.
I'll mute everybody.
Whatever. Are y'all ready? Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. That's not saying like only if you're in a clergy member, if you're a barista, if you work at the Whataburger, if you're, it's whatever you do. If you're a stay-at-home mom, you're working for the Lord.
Well, go 2,000 years back. If you're a servant, a slave in a rich person's home, and your job is to shovel the animal dung out of the stable or to watch the children or to cook the food, do that as if you're doing it for Jesus, even if you are doing it for a horrible person, because the work in and of itself is sacred.
Okay, I've got a question, though. How have you heard, or if it's just me, how have you heard this verse abused or maybe taken out of context to in a way? And
well,
I have a very specific idea, but I'm just curious if
when they don't
let me
it.
Say hey this first, like let me say this, Daryl. That scripture that Joni just read, do all things as if you're doing it unto the Lord. If you're a Christ follower, then you are going to have that mindset. But if you're not,
it's wrapped up in your identity anyways.
Then you're not, it's not going to be unto the Lord. That's just like what we were talking about earlier. So,
right. I've heard
there you go with identity again.
I know. It's a big
so
topic.
Is it a big topic? Because I know what you mean, but I can't separate what I do from who I am.
And I think that's the difference between us who are in Jesus and people that just, you know, that aren't. I'll just say that. I think that's, we can't leave our jobs at home, at work, right? They're with us all the time because that's who we are. It's interweaved and it's intertwined in us.
Interweaved?
Interweaved. It's interweaved. Innermost parts.
A new breakfast cereal from Toast. Interweaved. Interweaves.
I don't think we want that one.
So I didn't mean to cut you off there, but two or three times you talked about the identity and work. And so I got you in terms of like if I'm a teacher, I must be something else other than a teacher.
Right. It is what you do and it is holy, but it's not who you are. So wherever you are, whatever you do, you're still.
But I would say
your identity is you're enough in Christ. You're
yes, but I would say maybe someone is gifted with teaching. That's one of their gifts, is to teach. And so really you're going to see teaching come out in everything they do, whether they're talking to someone in the grocery store or whatever. They're going to have that
their chalkboard
part. Sometimes those people are
annoying.
Part of their identity is being a teacher. And I think that's...
You guys were watching me give the diagram, the sentence to the clerk at the HEB. You were watching that? I'm so sorry. No one teaches diagramming anymore.
Sometimes.
The identity part.
Can you diagram a sentence?
That
was the thing I did the worst. I was horrible at diagramming sentences.
I love diagramming sentences.
I would rather do an algebra equation than.
Said nobody ever.
I love algebra.
Well, I'm looking for some quotes in this book, and this one just.
There's quotes in the book.
Yep. It says, your calling is not a job. It's your entire life.
Yep.
And then this one before it that was kind of funny. It says, a calling is not some carefully crafted plan. It's what's left when the plan goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Who wrote this book?
A guy by the name of Jeff Goins. It's called The Art of Work.
The Art of Work.
You'd pronounce that Goins, not Goins.
Goins. Goins. I don't know. G-O-I-N-S. Goins, like coin. I don't know. I don't know, Joni. Teach me how I would pronounce
O-I
it.
O-I is a diphthong, and it makes oi.
You're a diphthong.
Oi.
Oi, oi, oi.
So, how about this one? You want more Bible? I brought my Bible in, too.
Okay, go.
It's my favorite verses. Proverbs 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Mm. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? Mm-hmm. When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. Mm-hmm. The ant is known for her labor and her work and her preparedness. I put that with what you wrote, read earlier, and then the injunction that Paul gives us, if someone will not work, he should not eat.
Which is interesting because there are a lot of people who didn't work that the Christ followers were expected to support because they were trained based on their ability.
But they were expected to work somewhere, some other way. The expectation was not of a handout, but of you're going to work.
But if you think about the beggar at the pool of Bethesda, I can never say that.
Bethesda.
Say it.
Bethesda.
But see, I can't do that. Bethesda. That's not even natural. But if you think about when Jesus said, "Do you want to be well?" Because he wasn't trained, he wasn't.
Well, his life wouldn't. He would have to totally change.
His life was going to be completely different because people would come by and give him money.
So you have beggars who are beggars because of their health.
Right.
Paul's not talking about those individuals. He's talking about those who
just don't want to work.
Who don't want to work, and they're living off the benevolence of other people who do work. That's what he's talking about. So to me, this puts the whole thing in perfect symmetry, that our work is sacred, and because we work, then what we do it matters, and that fulfills us. And then we help the community by the work that we've done. I think that it all comes together in that way.
I think of the stewardship passage of being a steward of your talents, a steward of your life, a steward of our world, a steward of the people around you. I think good and sacred work involves, it's multi-layered. It involves your calling, your identity, your giftedness, your creativity, but it involves servanthood and community and a lot.
So here's a thought, brain thought. Thought experiment. Uh-oh.
Misty's highlighting
Bible verses.
Highlighting now.
She's coming at you.
Thought experiment. It's a common trope. I'm reading a book right now that has this in it. It's a common science fiction trope. And it goes like this. In some society somewhere on some futuristic world, what they do with their people is, through genetics and selective breeding, people are born into a specific skill, born with a specific skill set.
Easy for you to say.
That they're created to do, and that's their job. They have that one thing they're created, and that's all they're created to do. So some people are bred to lead. Some are scientists. Some are teachers, some are explorers, they're born for that one job. So take that, put that over here, and then add to it this other thought of, in our culture, we're rapidly moving to a place where robots and AI are progressing. It probably won't happen during our lifetime.
I don't think so.
Because we're all so old.
Because they said technology was going to take over by the 90s, and we wouldn't have even full-time jobs. And I feel like we're working even harder now.
So hold on. I'm not done with what
Sorry,
I'm
keep
going.
Going. Keep going.
Just give me this conceit.
Not being
just
so
a moment.
Smart.
So you do agree with the premise that robotics and AI is progressing
yes.
rapidly.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I just like arguing with you, actually.
Well, there's no money in that.
Welcome to Wednesday.
So you get that flow, though. It's progressing. Probably not during our lifetime, but maybe our children or grandchildren, when they're our age, which I may still be alive, but when they're productive and active, they may live in a world where everything, construction, food service, food prep, baby care, child care, everything is done by robots and AI. And then what happens to you then? What would a world look like if, on one hand, you were born to do one thing for the benefit of society, but then again, your life was such that you did not have to work to make money? In our world, in all of human existence, you work to survive. Well, you can beat up capitalism all you want. I'm a capitalist. Keep that in mind. But even before capitalism, if you didn't tend the harvest, you didn't eat. If you didn't go hunt and gather, you didn't eat. If you didn't build the house and make sure the roof took care of you, you'd die of frostbite. So you always had to work to survive. What if we lived in a world where your work, your vocation, your vocare, your calling, was not linked to economics because it was all just done? What would happen in that world? Would we be more fulfilled or less fulfilled?
Less.
I think it would let creativity come out.
Maybe. I think it'd be mad chaos.
Misty does not like this world.
I don't like it at all. Too much free time makes for bad decisions.
Well, but see, I think what's happened is you say we're working harder than ever before. And I agree with you. The work week has gotten longer and longer for folks.
Well, I'm in your world where it's just nothing but nobody has to work because nobody needs money. That's where I'm at.
Right, but see, I think what happens is if I put those two together, I think that if I were working and it wasn't connected to money, I might actually work harder because it's my vocation. I'm not doing just a job. What I'm doing is what I really love to do.
Yeah.
Music, all day long, painting all day long, writing, reading.
But that's
studying.
You. What about all the other people that feel like they have no, you know,
my
calling in their life?
My perception is that if you took some of those, there's always going to be sluggards. Every society has sluggards. Yeah. Maybe the AI will just carry them off somewhere and leave them in a forest. But most folk would find something meaningful to engage in.
Yeah,
you're
going
to have that pressure to produce for the sake of money off of your shoulder. And I think everyone likes the idea of a permanent vacation. But even if you go on a long vacation, what do you usually do? You start getting a little bit bored of the excess. And if you've got that off your shoulders, then I think you then have the time to explore. And there was a quote, I'm sure y'all heard it before. It said, don't ask what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and then go do that. I think that gives
That's
people.
That's a Bonhoeffer.
That gives, it's Howard Thurman.
Just kidding.
Because
it's
what
Thurman.
The world needs is people who have come alive. I think
I was thinking Bonhoeffer. No, that's
it didn't sound like him, but
I think in your world, in your sci-fi world that you're talking about, that takes that pressure off, so people then might actually have the freedom or the necessity to look inward and explore who am I, what does make me come alive, and then if you tap into that, I agree with you totally. I think that's something you're gonna almost overwork.
I think that Misty is such a skeptical person. I think some would. I think some wouldn't. Just
no, I'm
way.
Not saying everyone, but I'm saying
nobody would be
I'm
hungry.
Saying it's going to create the opportunity for that more so.
I'm just looking here in 1 Corinthians in chapter 10, verse 23. It says, "All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up." So when you do, and I see where you're coming. I see that, but in my mind, it just goes back to the Israelites and just the grumbling and the complaining and the, I don't know. I don't know.
Right. They had everything provided for them.
Should stay in Egypt and be slaves.
I'm good at complaining. So,
I see, though, what you mean, though. They had everything provided for them.
I'm a complainer.
They had the way provided. They had their food provided.
And they still complained.
And they still
complained. And they still grumbled. Yeah, but they were still angry.
It was not provided in the way we want it. We want it provided, like, all forever.
I know.
We want to win the lottery and have everything, whereas
God was providing.
Just because it's there,
just because you can, doesn't mean you should. Not all things are beneficial. And I feel like we're called to benefit others.
How about this? Let's use this, and then we'll bring this to a good, solid conclusion because Fishbeck's ready to get out of here. the test case for my world, and I think it goes for yours as well, this is where symmetry comes, is that you look at retired people. Now, there's two kinds of retired people. There's the ones that they retire from their work, and they have a pension, they have Social Security, their house is paid for, and they get involved in something. They become the...
They wonder why they didn't do it sooner.
Right. They get involved in church or the Kiwanis, or they take up a painting class, or they begin woodworking.
They travel.
They do something that fills them with such joy.
They may make the most of it.
They may have 10 or 15 years before their body gives out, but they have... Because their financial security is no longer tied to what they're doing. They can do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They spend time with their grandkids. They travel. All they read. They're engaged. Then there's the other kind of retired person. Same situation. Financially secure. They have a retirement. They have a pension. Their house is paid for. And they just sit at home and do nothing.
Well, the first 6 months, they love it, right?
Right.
And then after that, it's...
And usually within 5 years, they're dead. Those are the ones that die first because they have absolutely no... So I think in this dream world, because all things are lawful. So if we live in a world where AI and robots do everything for you, there will be some who will say, I don't have to do anything and I'm just going to be a sluggard. It's lawful, but they won't live long because they're going to either turn to chaos, like you talk about, and self-destruction. Or others are going to do them in because you're not, you're just a horrible person. But a lot also, though, will soar. And humanity perhaps would attain such a level of... Now, I don't think we're going to do this side of heaven. But in my what-if world, if we could get there, perhaps all kinds of wonderful things could happen. I can see that world in my mind. It'd be a very boring book, though, because no one likes a book where it all happens good. Every book needs to ruin.
It's fun to think
life.
About, though. It's interesting. It's interesting to think about it.
So that's beneficial. All things are lawful, but not all things are beneficial. And then the person who learns what in their life is beneficial for them and for others, that becomes sacred and holy. If your only question is what's the least amount I got to do, that's lawful. It's not very helpful. Yeah. You guys are amazing. Okay. I did not know where this was going to go today. Did we miss anything? Did we have enough material for another session on this?
It was fun.
Did we cover all your stuff, Misty?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
Joni?
I'm good.
You're good? You got your pad there. You ready to go?
Good.
Okay. All right. You guys hang in there. I think we have 3 more podcasts this season, and the last one's going to be a real humdinger. All right. Take care. Love each other.
See ya.
See you later.
Peace out.
Thanks so much for listening to Under the Water Tower, a podcast dedicated to honest discussion of the Bible. To donate to this ministry, just go to fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give. Just a reminder to subscribe to Under the Water Tower on Apple Podcast and Spotify. That way you'll never miss an episode. Help us to spread the word about our podcast by talking about it and sharing it on your social media. Thanks again for joining us. On behalf of Under the Water Tower, I'm Kelly Trepain.